The following episode was recorded live on YouTube. Check out our website at messagecenter.show for all of our episodes.
I'm Daryl Isisivis.
Hello, everyone. I'm Daniel Glenn.
Yeah, and the 365 Message Center show live again. We don't have time to mess around.
No, we don't.
And I must say, as I look over some of these messages, as someone who looks at the Message Center regularly with you, I feel overwhelmed. I feel like, whoa, there is a lot there.
There is. There's quite a few. We've got well over a dozen this week to discuss. So I think we just need to jump right into it. Mm-hmm. So this first one, this modern lifecycle policy for Microsoft Teams desktop client, Daryl. This is MC193099.
Sometimes they form nice little patterns.
Yes. So this is making sure, right, that everyone has the latest desktop client, right, for Teams.
Yeah. Now, that's an interesting thing that they're talking about here. That I mean, I would have expected that the Teams client keeps itself up to date, much like Chrome or, web browsers that are standalone. The Teams desktop client is now going to be able to be enforced to upgrade, or you'll get a warning basically for those that are out of date. So for whatever reason, you will get that. And there's an in-app notification too for those who are, let's see if I can open this up. In-app notification for you as an end user, copy image address.
And they've been doing this for some clients. Power BI Desktop comes to mind. When you update when you open up Power BI Desktop and there is an update that has been released, which is every month, it notifies you, hey, there's a new one to download. So they're trying to keep you to where you stay up to date on the clients. And I think that's a good idea. But like you, I was thinking, I thought these were updated anyway. So maybe this is where we are have Teams open all the time, and now there's a new one, and so it prompts us or what? But but there's reasons here that they may not auto update antivirus software. So if there's something that's blocking the communication channel for the checking for updates or actually performing the update. Slow network, because it's not going to bog your network connection down. It waits actually to download that over the line. So
I'm wondering if it's the slow network that is causing the issues. But yeah, I'm used to seeing the Teams client restart itself. So it finds a network connection. Clearly it's working because it's connecting to your tenant. It's doing its thing. You're joining meetings like we are now here. But when you do fire it up, it does like a little restart to say, yeah, I've just given you the latest version. So interesting that there are still some things out there that can affect this process.
Yep,
moving along. Yeah. OneDrive Sync upgrades to SHA2 for enhanced security. And we've seen a few other services do this as well. So that's MC193213. Implementing,
and we talked about Office last episode, right? We talked about Office switching to this. So this talking about switching to the OneDrive Sync, switching to this is just falls right in line with that.
So I don't want to say too much more about that, except, what do we need to do to prepare? All versions of Windows covered, along with dates of most recent patch releases. Administrators should check this article to verify that they're running the correct update for their version of Windows. So it does depend on the version of Windows that you're running, and make sure that you are doing so. This next one, I actually didn't read it. Zap, pow, yeah. Security and a word called Zap.
Yeah, I think, we talked about Zap, two or three weeks ago or so, about the whole malware changing. And so this is an This is a little bit more about how those updates are happening and the policies are changing. So we are able to set this as a toggle in the policy rather than just being able to set it with a PowerShell commandlet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep.
And so Zap this is zero-hour auto-purge.
Yes.
So and trying to... Take that burden off an admin from having to deal with and respond to certain security threats manually, that it's dealing with the core stuff automatically.
Yeah, so the title of this is Adding Malware Zap Toggle to the Security and Compliance Center, MC193218. And yeah, it's supposed to be rolled out worldwide in early November.
Mm-hmm. I found this next one about OneDrive encouraging, but I wonder how often this scenario turns up. Updated feature: OneDrive PC folder backup support for cross volume moves. MC193219. Do you still partition your computer, Daniel?
I don't, but I did run into issues. I am all on board with cloud. Yay. So when I look for a machine, you know, like a laptop, it was for the longest time, oh, it's got to have a lot of storage. I need 256 is so small. I'm going to need even more than that. And getting a Surface device has changed my mind on that completely. The Surface Pro 4, when I got it, I was able to use a SD card, right? They accept an SD card,
yeah,
which is a separate volume. And it was able to, so I moved my files there and be able to save space. And so I started, before OneDrive was able to install to a separate drive, it had to install on C drive for the longest time, the OneDrive sync client. And your OneDrive volume had to be on the C, had to be on your system volume. So I struggled with that in the early days, and now you can install it in different places. But so do I partition my hard drive? No. But I do need to expand my space. And so this being able to have a different install, a different install volume for where OneDrive is installing and where your desktop documents and pictures folders are, which is normally on your system drive in the user's path. So it being on a different volume would cause errors. And so this update is removing that error that you had had in previous experiences with it.
Yeah, I know that there's probably still some IT shops out there, I should say it a bit more formally, information support teams that need to build machines and images where they fit into a C volume and they've got a D or an E volume for files. And so, yeah, this change is allowing you to be able to back that up. OneDrive is going to cover that. So yep. If you previously rolled it out, is there anything they need to know? How does it affect me?
The only thing is, if you've previously rolled out the silent opt-in policy there is talking about, and it failed, which was a big deal because it silently failed. You didn't really know what was going on. The next try, a retry will now succeed. So if you previously rolled it out, then it will actually retry and will work now. So.
Yep. Silently opt out and it silently fails too. But we need to give this next message a cheer, right? A yes, finally, this is awesome, good news. It's actually a headline for this week. SharePoint site URL rename, a new feature is now available, MC193275. This is a big deal. Why is it a big deal?
Well, the example that's given here is actually a good example, but it's only one example. The example in the message is you've misspelled a site name. So you misspelled marketing or, human resources or whatever department it is. You created a site and oops, you left out a letter. And the so being able to change that will enable you to fix that misspelling. You know, so that's good. I think the there's other use cases here. Obviously, I think when teams are renamed, you know, you name the site as a as the name of a group or something. And I don't mean Office 365 group. I just mean a working team and yeah. or a department, and they change names. What do you do now?
We're no longer called the Digital Workplace Team. We're called the Modern Workplace Team because it sounds more modern.
Right. Exactly.
But it is a big deal, and it is, you know, like you say, apart from hastily named groups and sites, what it's going to do for you is make the job a lot easier to actually redirect traffic. What I was worried about was, okay, what does it do? How deep is it going to go in and rewrite URLs? Is it going to go in and find everywhere where there's a link and change it that way? It doesn't deal with it from that end, does it?
No, and I read this to mean automatic links, you know, things where SharePoint has generated a link to that site, then it will update all of those links. They will work fine. But if you've added a link to, you know, in a document or even, in a list or something, then those may not work. And so, I see this happening probably, I could have used this many times in those initial hours after I created a site and someone, and I send the email saying, here's the site, or I share it with them and they go, Daniel, we don't abbreviate the department name like that. Oh no. Or, I misspelled it. Like I mentioned before. So, you know, fixing it, then there's probably not going to be a bunch of links out there. Right. So you can fix it and it'll work and everything will be good. I shared it with them. They'll still be able to get to it when they click on that link and the email of the sharing, even though I've changed it, you know, it'll all work. The heavy links, the favorites in browsers and all that, I think that will, that's where we'll get stung.
Well, the way I read it too is that it's not necessarily to go out and change all those links because that would be a crazy big job, but rather deal with anything that hits the old reference, just redirect it to the new one.
Right.
So any of that deep linking that might be within a document or a list or something else, whatever pathway it takes to that old URL, it's going to make that redirect.
Right, which makes this a little different than, I thought this was a little more akin to the site swap. And because what we're doing there is we're swapping. We're saying take site B, put it in place of site A, and then move site A to C somewhere. Mm-hmm. Well, there do you move the links or not? I think the answer is they don't move the links. The links don't go with you. But I'm not 100% sure on that. I haven't tested, and I think I need to do that. I need to do some heavy testing there. But here it is. There will be a automatically generated redirect saying if you're trying to go to MSFT/whatever, it'll take you to Microsoft/whatever, you know, if the site has that, if that's the name of it. So,
yeah. Should we give this one a thumbs up? Oh, I like this.
Sure.
Yeah. Yes, let's like this. We have been waiting for this for some time. Great news. Okay, is it okay to contact me about feedback? No. Let's just send that. Goodo. It's always, good to give feedback.
Yep, I agree.
All right. I'm interested in anything to do with mobile and making people more productive while they're working and when they're out there. And this next one around Outlook Mobile is giving some intelligence to, what would I say? I wouldn't expect to see meeting insights as an experience on a mobile phone. No, we see it in Outlook Web Access or Outlook on the web, but it's this. Okay, should I say the number? Time-saving updates for Outlook Mobile help you be better prepared. MC193281.
281.
Introducing meeting insights to Outlook on mobile app, iOS and Android.
And Android.
Yeah. So this apparently helps you get more prepared for your meetings, because even from your mobile, it's going to say, well, here's the people attending the meeting. Some of these are your contacts and they've shared things with you. So here's some suggested documents that you should read. Here's some of their recent activity. It's got a picture.
Yeah, and I think have you heard, is it the Bezos, Amazon, the way he runs meetings?
No.
I think it's him. I think it's him. He, I was reading this article and it's talking about leaders who run meetings and how they run them. So it may not be him. It may have been somebody else. But basically what they do, and it's a lot of work, is before every meeting, during the meeting, like they start a meeting, someone has, the leader of the meeting has put together, compiled a document, a printed document of everything they're going to discuss in the meeting. And they do this because they know people who are coming to the meeting are not going to come prepared. So they print this document out, hand it to them. In the first 30 minutes of every meeting, they read the document. Everyone just sits there silently and reads the document. And and it's one of those, I think for people, I think it's kind of a drastic measure of trying to fix a problem, because there is a problem with this. People come into a meeting and they don't know what they're doing. They have no idea what it's about and they are not prepared. And they come in and they go, what's this meeting about anyway? And when someone says that,
get out
that
of the
at
room.
Least part of the meeting, it's like, I'm out. At least part of the meeting is not going to be productive, because you're going to have to bring them up to speed. Now, do we all, I think for those meetings where they print it out and hand it to them and they sit there for 30 minutes, I think that's more for people who have meetings all day and they don't have time to prepare for every meeting, right? It's just, there's no way you can prepare for every meeting, because they get back to back to back to back to back and it just doesn't work. And so I get that. So if that's the type of person or environment you're in, then I get that taking time to do that. And I'm coming back. It's a long story to say. For this, I think it is helpful, and I think it's a beginning of what could be helpful to understand what is going on to help me prepare for that meeting, understand who's going to be there, what they're working on, what's going on, so that I can go in that meeting and go, someone brings up something. Sally, I know you were just working on this. I saw the document, that you had shared. Can you tell us more about that? Because I think you're already, you might be already there and we might not need to discuss this. Or, so I don't know.
This supports the probably the thing that I struggled with a lot in high school and college was crash preparing for tests. And that's what this feels like, is, hey, you haven't read this yet, but we're going to give you a reference to it, and read it as quickly as you can so that it's fresh in your memory. It's definitely a good thing. It's that culture.
It's like the Cliff Notes or something. It was a little
Cliff Notes.
Yeah.
Here's the bullet points that are kind of covering what we're going to cover. Mm-hmm. But it's one thing is, as you were talking about this, sometimes we open up our appointment to say, oh, where are we next? Okay, that's where we've got to go to. So jump in the car. Do not read this while driving. Sure.
Nope.
While you've got an Uber driver or a whatever driver.
Lyft or whatever.
A Lyft. Yep. But time zone support was another one. So how many times have you've had to organize a meeting from your phone? It's with people that are in different places around the world. I do use a separate app to figure out what time I should be using, but now it's going to be built in to the app, at least one time zone anyway. You can set it and say, I've got a meeting with Daniel. He's in Tennessee and I'm in New Zealand. So I'll just set that and then I know what your local time is. What else? Those are pretty good. Oh, and you can respond to an RSVP and see the location from your landing screens or your lock screen on your phone. So you can expand that out. You can accept. You can see where things are, and keep your phone locked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's cool. Moving on to another interesting one. Teams will silently sign in new users. MC193345. It seems like, yes, like on a number of fronts, maybe Teams is a big thing and it needs to be on all the time.
I think they want you to have it on all the time. This is really more about bringing a single sign-on experience without having to have a domain joined PC. So if you're signed in to another app, say Office, you know, you've got Pro Plus running and you've your login is tied to that. Then when you start Teams, it's going to know that and say, okay, that's the user. I'm going to use that user and move forward with it.
Yep.
So one thing I think is interesting. They're releasing this first for Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows 10, but only Windows 10 of older version. It's very interesting. Only on version 1607 or lower. So they're really targeting this for those older OSs. Some are not that old, but it's, I don't know, maybe a couple years old now, the 1607. Mm. So they're targeting those machines.
Yeah, that it's like that's a problem. And are they going to, yeah, they do this for the newer versions of Windows 10, I expect. Or maybe it's not a problem. But it's one of the motivations they talk about in the message is that, you know, Teams is being positioned to be central to a lot of things, and to have it open and running in the background is important. And it does, once you've signed in. This, as you point out, is about signing in people who have not opened up Teams yet. They've just opened up Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook. And
really, if you're talking about adoption, you're talking about actually using the product, and you've made a commitment to use the product, and you've got people who just, you know, they're the kind of the drive-by people. You know, they're the type that, you know, won't have conversations.
Have you
or whatever.
Signed in yet? Have you signed yeah. in? No.
And so, you know, this is helping them along a little bit to say, hey, I can reach out to her or him. I can reach out to them to ping them, and they don't have to do anything. Mm. You know, it's just there and it's logged in. But again, this is just to make it a little bit easier to sign in, so they're not having to repeat that, you know, logging in.
Yep. It only affects new installations, fresh installations of Teams. Mm-hmm. So of course, it's not going to impact Teams as it's installed out there. You still have to, for the short while, go out to the people who haven't signed in at all and check. But it's good news for those who are going to be deploying Teams afresh soon as a new project, and mm-hmm. that you will have less of that question of, have you signed in yet? Oh yeah, no, right. it signed me in automatically. The first time I accessed a document, it seemed like it was doing something in the background.
Yeah.
All right. Next message. We'll fly through some of these too, because yes. we're coming through to the end of the show. But you've got ATP SafeLinks update, additional yep. SafeLinks protection with an Outlook MC193357.
Yeah, so this is protection extending to hyperlinks that are in your email, but this is also URLs and message subjects. URLs and nested message items, so not just in the message itself, but in yeah. items that are nested or attached, et cetera. FTP links, text that looks, here's another one, text that looks like a URL, but the person sending it didn't make it a URL, but when Outlook receives it, you know, it conveniently and helpfully converts it into a URL. Well, we need to make sure those are safe too. So being able to handle those in Outlook itself is great. So extending that.
Yeah, and Outlook itself is doing it.
Yeah. Yep. That's
whereas
right.
you know, our previous versions of ATP, it was Exchange that was rewriting these links, and when you received the message, sometimes
That's right.
remember
it was before it came to you,
you'd receive an email maybe from a colleague or for someone that just sent it through, and you go to click that link, and Exchange is still trying to rewrite the URL. You remember that?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, it's not ready yet. Okay, and we're done. Yes, we can open that link. So this is the Outlook driving it. Customers who have already adopted Safe Links Protection, the feature will work automatically. There's nothing for those customers to do. No impact for customers who have not adopted Safe Links Protection. Funny that. But you got the message just in case you might be interested in adopting Safe Links.
That's right.
Microsoft 365 audit public preview 193.448. A new feature, a new service, a new audit solution.
And this is bringing again. We've talked about auditing quite a bit. They've been updating this quite a bit in the last few weeks, but bringing that forensic investigations in your organization. So high value events, longer term retention, near real time access to data. I like that, near real time. It's close. And I think it's coming to the new features and existing audit share the same back end that stores your audit logs. So that's good. So you don't need to set up new data pipelines or anything like that. When you're doing these audit things, you take the logs and you go zoop. You know, you don't make it part of it. You want to save those logs. And so you don't need to make any changes to that. Now in our section, do we need to prepare for this change? No, you don't need to make any, you know, but I think you do need to take an account. And if you want to use this then, and reporting off of this, and then most certainly you need to pay attention.
We've got another Teams,
surprise
Teams. Yeah. Well, I looked at this. It's like, okay, is this something else again? That on the surface, it looks like, preventing you from being able to disable Teams, kind of, but only in a certain way. Retiring the ability to disable Teams per license category in Microsoft Teams services. Now, this doesn't mean you can't disable Teams. It just means that when you go into the Teams Admin Center, or what used to be the Skype Admin Center, there was a way of saying, I'm going to disable it for this license type. Disable it for kiosk, disable it for different types of licenses. You won't be able to do that in that admin center. You'll have to either go back to disabling it with a per license per person scenario, where you can go into Daniel's account and flick the switch and say, no, we're not ready to give him Teams yet, so we'll roll out this new account for him without it. Or you'll have to use PowerShell, which I just want to, I want to point this out just before we, you know, go a bit further on that. Have you got this thing up in the top right-hand corner now? It's up here in the admin center. What's that? Cloud Shell.
Yes. So for those that are listening, there is a new icon that's next to the notifications icon in the top right of the Microsoft 365 Admin Center, and it when you hover over it, it says Cloud Shell, but when you click on it, it does absolutely nothing for me. I mean, it brings up a black box as if it is a shell, but I can't type in it. I don't see a cursor. I don't see anything. So I'm not entirely sure what this is for. So I think we need to ask around and figure out what this is. But I'm guessing it's a Cloud Shell to interact with the Admin Center, but it's not doing anything for me, and I'm the global admin, so I would hope I would have access.
We've seen this available in the Azure admin portal for a while, where rather than having to spin up a PowerShell application to throw in your scripts, you can just do it directly from the admin center. So I expect that's what it's for. And you know, bringing it back to this message, that's potentially somewhere where you could drop in a command and say, right, are we ready to enable it for this license category? Let's drop in the command.
Yeah, and I think there's obviously a reason or a use case for this, because this doesn't apply to education, because that's a perfect example of when you want to turn off Teams. You don't want students to have Teams. So if you've licensed Office 365 for your whole school, then maybe you want to turn off Teams for all students because you don't want them sitting chatting while they're supposed to be listening to their teacher, right?
But Teams is core, though, to one of the school and classroom scenarios, isn't it? Unless you've chosen a different product.
Right. Or it may be. But again, don't tell anybody I said this, but I'm looking behind me to make sure there's nobody there. Teams might not be right for every situation. It may not be the perfect product for every situation. You may want to disable Teams. And if you do, then, I mean, they made a special note here that EDU faculty and EDU student license categories are excluded from this. So they still will be able to select the license type and exclude. So there's reasons here, but anyway, I think so we could still do it, but it's going to be per person. It's not going to be per license type.
Per person or that script where it's a slightly different mechanism.
Yes.
All right. Just the last couple of ones. The Yammer removing system messages from all company community. This is good if you're they would drop in there to say, hey, everyone, this person's been added. This system message is important to show everyone, but doesn't seem to be as important to display now that we're shifting the purpose.
MC193453, and it, you know, all of those announcements of, hey, a new person has joined, say hi.
I think those are still there. Yeah.
Well, but it's the user creation. You've created a user or created a group.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
To Yammer it in it and it put it in there. Yep.
Oh no,
it's no longer
right.
Going to be
in
all network, all company. I mean, so that's good. I think it's good, especially for large organizations that have.
I'll tell you a project that I've seen this recently too, where that has been an annoyance. They're trying to do it in quite a controlled fashion. They've got a couple of the Yammer feeds are on the homepage to try and get people to engage with just specific groups as they roll out Yammer. And one of those they're showing is the all feed, or your feed.
Yeah.
And so it's basically, as they're adding everyone to this, as they're rolling people out, it's like, right, well, there's our eight messages that could be displayed on the page. They're gone now with those eight people we've just added.
Right.
That message won't be there. And
December 20th is when that goes away.
Yep. Lastly, there's another Zap thing going on. Mm-hmm. Updated anti-spam settings and changes to 0-hour auto-purge. Auto-purge.
So this is it, basically rolling out two, and we've talked about Zap quite a few times, but rolling out these two new PowerShell commandlets, and they will be taking the place of Zap enabled. It'll be Fish Zap enabled is a new one, and Spam Zap enabled, and those will be taking place of the existing Zap enabled parameter. And if you've not made any other changes, so if you've not made any changes in the compliance center, the security and compliance center, or in PowerShell, it will just follow what those settings are and for Zap enabled. And it'll follow that until it goes away. And so you're kind of covered there. But if you've made changes, like I said, outside of that using Security and Compliance Center or PowerShell, then you will need to make sure that those are set, the new ones are set properly.
I think I'm interested in this one about outbound spam policy. It's ability to limit people in how much mail and recipients they can send to in a message.
And generally, you know, generally these are either mistakes or people who don't know what they're doing, or it's someone's account's been taken over. Now, I've had a couple of friends who have had, I've received emails and it says, take a look at this contract. And you're like, what? And it's got an attachment. And I contacted them on, you know, another service and said, did you send me an email? But before I replied to that email and said, did you send me this email? Yes, I sent it to you. Open it up and do it. Well, someone had taken over their email. Well, this is one of those situations where this is one other way of helping with that, as if someone hacks an email address and then tries to spam, 500 people that are in your address book with this message, then it's going to help stop that. It'll also help stop someone trying to use company resources to spam people too. There's services for that, and Office 365 is not that service.
All right, well, that rounds out those messages for the week. There was a lot of them, yeah. And just one other observation was Microsoft Stream has given you the ability to trim videos and upload and replace them, and that was a message that came a ways back. I think it was back in August. So it's finally arrived, and it's good thing to have if you're running a live stream like this and you want to trim off all the preamble that you might have had at the beginning or anything you've left running at the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that is good. Thanks for calling that out.
Yeah. Well, that was this week. And thank you for joining us. Catch the audio podcast. That's messagecenter.show. You'll find all the different links to different podcast platforms that you might want to listen to. And we'll see you again next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye, everyone.